Welcome to Third Republic's Women in Tech podcast. As part of the series, we'll be interviewing community leaders, experienced professionals, and influential individuals around their experiences of pursuing a career in tech, as well as addressing what businesses and communities can do to encourage more women into the technology industry and informing the community by promoting awareness and creating more opportunities. We believe that most businesses understand that having a diverse workforce and leadership team that reflects its customer base will be more successful in delivering new and innovative products and solutions. And with the help of our inspirational speakers taking part in the Women in Tech podcast, we hope to play a part in making technology a more attractive and inclusive working environment for all. In this episode, we sit down with Jo Stansfield, Diversity and Inclusion in Tech Consultant.
Could you tell us about how you got into a career in tech and where did it all start from?
Yeah, well, I was always very kind of sciencey and techie when I was at school. They didn't do computer science lessons back a million years ago back then, so I took science A-levels, physics and maths. Actually took art as well because I always loved art, but saw that as a hobby route. And so when I went to university, I studied physics, but tried to weave in as much computer science as I could because I really wanted to learn more about like the computer aspects of it. And there was one project that we had that just completely nailed my interest. You know, from that moment on, I knew what I wanted to do, which was a rare moment of clarity in my life, I have to say. But we had a project where we had to build a simulation of two galaxies colliding. So it was a project that combined my physics interests with my like desire to learn more about computers and how to, you know, put them to use for solving like real problems. And so what I realized was that in this, you know, calculation that I was essentially doing in the computer, it could make it into a simulation. So you could see the galaxies coming together and you could see what happened to all the stars as they collided. And that just like really caught my imagination. You know, it just really dawned on me that, you know, computer software is just such a powerful tool. You know, you can explore things that you could never actually do in real life, but you can find answers to kind of really big, challenging questions by using simulation. Yeah. So my first job was actually in an engineering firm. You know, I went looking specifically for jobs where I could put my physics to use and my programming skills to do simulations. So I was working in a defense company actually doing simulated battlefields. So I know some people will find that a challenging, you know, concept of working in that kind of area, but you know, really it was absolutely fascinating. And it was something that meant that I could be putting, you know, my skills and knowledge to a use that I did think was actually really important, you know, to understand, the factors in that environment that mean something's effective or not effective. And so it depends, you know, works or it doesn't work. So it was a really, kind of fascinating techie kind of job to be doing with a real kind of application that I thought was really important.
That sounds really cool. Like, you don't hear those sorts of jobs every day. So
actually, I mean, one of the things I really loved about it was that it combined software and hardware. So you could write the software that would simulate like an aeroplane flying by, but then they'd have like real hardware that you could plug into it too. So you could get output from the real hardware that would tell you how it would respond to certain things that were happening. So if it saw a threat, you know, it was, you know, the radar would swivel, other stuff would happen. So it was, you know, combining all of these different types of factors, and you actually sometimes got, you know, army squaddies coming in to use these simulated, you know, bits of equipment and pilots, and it was very
cool first job.
It was an amazing first job, actually. I mean, it really set the scene for my career because I had such broad responsibilities, as well as writing the software. You know, I was analyzing the output from these scenarios that we were running, and I was doing some project management. So it really gave me a good kind of broad coverage of skills. And in the true nature of someone in their first job, I just didn't realize how unusual that was actually to have such a broad responsibility as a graduate. But it's when it came time to move on, I was really interested to continue with the software route and to really professionalize that side of it. So within the simulation department, within an engineering company, you know, the software was really good for that purpose, but quite aware that there was an awful lot more that would go around writing a professional software products that could be released for general use. So after that, I went looking for software jobs, you know, still within the engineering domain. That's essentially what my career has been about ever since. You know, software
engineers. It's taken off, shall we say?
Absolutely.
What do you think then that businesses could do to encourage more women to get involved in tech?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because I think there's two sides to that question. You know, there's lots of things that businesses can do to look more attractive and make tech a more attractive place to be. But at the same time, it's really important to me that businesses take responsibility to actually be a better place for women to work as well. So in terms of, you know, showing what's attractive about the business, you know, I think role models are really important, you know, just showing women who people can relate to doing, you know, a whole range of jobs that maybe they've not considered before. And that just really helps to inspire and open up imagination and possibilities. You know, and that can be through career events or it could be like outreach in schools, you know, in the way that they present themselves online through their websites. But then, you know, the flip side of that is that the company culture internally really has to be a good place for women to be. Otherwise, all of that is pointless and actually, I'd say, unethical. You know, I don't want to be in a business of attracting women into something that doesn't work for them. So it's really important actually to be focusing on what the business can be doing to build that place where women have got equal progression opportunities, equal fulfillment in their careers to men as well. And then, you know, the goal would be you enter into that virtuous cycle where women in the company become advocates for the company, you know, and they're out there finding people in their networks and recommending, you know, this is such an awesome place to work. You know, tech's a great industry. You know, this is why I love it. And then it's really a much more meaningful interaction.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, as you say, like mentors, for example, huge push to for the younger generation as well, you know, to start with them and help them go into their careers and think, well, oh no, this isn't scary, like this is something that I know I can do because I've seen all of these other women do it, they've done it, they're, you know, they're succeeding more and more and more, kind of thing. So yeah, no,
when women entering tech, you know, the people emerging from degrees is usually, you know, kind of 17-20% of people with you know, qualifications that, you know, would typically take them into that kind of career. So it's very small proportions, and really, you know, research shows that, you know, those stereotypes and those expectations begin in children, you know, really young, actually, you know, as young as six, you can start to be building kind of stereotyped expectations of what men do, what women do. So actually just working with children throughout their school years to, you know, break some of those expectations and give some new possibilities.
Yeah.
Really important.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I totally agree. What have you found to be your biggest challenges when starting out in your career in software engineering?
Yeah, I had a really tough time actually after that first job in the aerospace firm, just finding what my next role would be. So, you know, I'd made the decision I want to be making like professional software products.
Yeah.
And I was looking what felt like for ages for a role that would work with me. And I was making lots and lots of applications, but getting lots of rejections saying, yeah, you know, we love what your CV says, but you've not got enough experience. And I'm sure that this is a familiar feeling, you know, to lots of people early in their careers that, you know, how do you get that, you know, that foot on the rung to actually get enough experience that they'll take you seriously, even for a junior role.
Yeah.
So what I ended up doing was taking a job that I did get an interview for, but I had some doubts about. And honestly, it was a rubbish job. I was looking for a new job pretty soon, like within weeks of starting it. But it did tick the box of experience. So although, you know, the job didn't work for me, I was looking to move on quickly. Actually, it did just give me that foot up to have, you know, that experience I could talk about on my interviews, you know, put on my CV. So it was a learning experience, let's say, and helped me to focus with future jobs, you know, of things that would be important to look out for, you know, when I was having an interview and figuring out if a place would be for me or not.
Yeah, I think we've all had that job or those jobs where we're like, well, they don't tick the box that we want them to, but they do tick the, oh, look, I've got a foot up the ladder kind of thing. They do help. What made you then transition? Because obviously your career has been so far software within software engineering, but what's made you transition from software engineering into diversity and becoming a global lead
Yeah, it's quite a long path between being a software engineer and being what I am now.
Yeah.
Many years in the interim, you know, I developed my career as a software engineer and then became a product manager. So I was getting more and more interested in the people sides of it and really being able to meet the needs of the customers and having that higher level view of how this product actually is satisfying the needs of the customers. So over time, I was getting much more interested in the interplay between people and product. The thing that was really the trigger moment was when I went on maternity leave for having my first child. And I'd been quite used to working in an industry where, you know, I was the only woman in the team, or maybe there were two of us, you know, not very many women about me. So that was quite normal. Actually, I liked my colleagues, and sometimes I felt like being the only woman in the team just helped me to stand out a bit. But then when I was on maternity leave, it just kind of changed my attitudes completely. You know, I'd been busy thinking, you know, oh, other women just aren't like me. This isn't the kind of thing that they like. And then on maternity leave, I met a whole bunch of women. I live in Cambridge, and Cambridge is a kind of nuts place for science and tech. And loads of these women were doing tech jobs. They were doing science jobs. They were leading companies. And it just dawned on me, oh my God, women are amazing.
We're all right, yeah.
I never realised this, you know. Women do actually like this stuff as well. And it just struck me as completely absurd that I was sitting in baby groups, you know, with my son, and we were singing nursery rhymes together. And it was that had took me to meet women who had similar interests to me rather than in my professional life. So that just really sparked my curiosity of, you know, why is that happening then? Okay, so there's clearly women out there who are interested and extraordinarily capable at this.
Yeah.
So why do we not see any of them in work? So a friend of mine, absolutely amazing lady who's, you know, big in machine learning, voice recognition and things, gave me a few kind of pointers of things to start reading. And that just really sparked my interest to learn an awful lot more about what was behind it.
Yeah.
So roll forwards a couple of years, I was beginning to take more leadership responsibility at work, and I really was loving like the new learning that was going on with that. And in a moment of insanity, it occurred to me that actually I'd really love to learn a lot more deeply about the things that were becoming more and more important to me. So I signed up to take a master's degree online in organisational and business psychology.
I could
strengthen my leadership understanding and skills, and also to really give myself like a really rigorous basis to my understanding about what's going on. Mm-hmm. The factors why we don't see women progressing within tech the way that men do. So I've just reached the end of that, actually. So I've submitted my dissertation a few weeks back. So
that was a dissertation.
3-year process, I have to say. Going back to university as a mature student is both brilliant and awful. It's wonderful to have that kind of life experience that you bring to it. You know, I think it really kind of deepens the learning and the understanding. But it also made me realise students work so hard. You know, you don't really give students credit for it, I think.
No.
From the point of view of, you know, being a more senior person, seeing them come into the organisation, you kind of forget actually the depth of, you know, kind of knowledge and the rigour that they have to bring into their studies to emerge with the degrees that they get.
So,
you know, a real reminder actually that, you know, being a student is, you know, tough work. You know, there's real, real stretching stuff that has to go on.
I suppose as well, like from that point, like students that do work hard, and they do get a tough time of, you know, stereotypes of what a university student does, and all, you know, they just go out drinking kind of thing and don't really do much work. But I suppose in terms of like for females as well, and women who want to get into tech, and it's kind of like, you know, they say the women that do take university courses in tech subjects, and they've graduated, they do it, and then they, you know, are trying to find job roles in tech. I just wonder, I suppose, like how they must find being taken seriously, because it's one thing being just a person, a man or a woman, being taken seriously in anything that you do, especially at that age. But then I do think that, you know, it would be interesting to know how they find it. Like, is it even more of a challenge them getting into that role, or is it that actually businesses are, you know, very like aware of the situation and want to make the change for it. I suppose, is also the other side to it, isn't it? Like, the business has to want the change and has to want to make a difference, kind of thing.
I think business is getting much more aware now, actually, of the importance of having diversity and inclusion, and really casting the net a lot wider to find talented people. It needs to start at the top and ripple down, really. And you know, from what I see, there's loads of good intention there, but lots and lots of implementation still to happen, actually. So I think it's quite a mixed story. For women entering.
Yeah, no, definitely. But it's a story to still be told, I suppose. So
it is.
I guess that's good.
Yeah, so I signed up for my master's degree and found it very, very busy. And I was still trying to do my software job at the same time as this. So by this point, I'd become a head of department and, you know, had lots and lots of different stuff going on at the same time. And then I had all of this studying to do as well. And it was just mad and really busy. And I really loved everything I was doing, but there was just too much of it. So I decided, actually, I need to simplify my focus. And, you know, the point of this master's degree is to be working on my own ability to lead change and to really understand diversity and inclusion. So that's when I went to talk to our HR team to find out if there was any opportunity for me to be doing more of that, you know, which then, you know, eventually became the role that I'm doing now. So I'm also doing some side work. I'm setting up my own kind of independent consulting as well, you know, with the agreement of my main job. So getting to work a bit more widely with other organisations and support people across tech with diversity and inclusion related stuff.
I mean, that's really cool because you get to do now like both passions, I suppose, on both sides. So that's, yeah, it's exciting. What do you think then are, because as you mentioned that you're starting your own consultancy, so what do you think the benefits are of being a mentor for women in tech?
Yeah, well, I've been a mentor for a couple of women over the past few years. I'd just say it's immensely personally fulfilling. And actually, it was, in a way, a little bit surprised at just how helpful my experience could be to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So one of the, I was involved in a program called Tech Up for Women, which is run by some universities in the north of England. Professor Sue Black was leading that program. And I was a mentor to a lady in that course. And actually it was just a phenomenal experience, you know, seeing somebody, you know, come to understand, you know, new technologies, learn some new skills, and just be able to give them some advice about how the industry works and some pointers of, you know, how their previous experience might relate to current experience. And just, you know, seeing that transformation and how it can really, you know, bring somebody a whole new route in life. It's just amazing.
So just
a fantastic experience. I'd massively recommend it to anybody. And if you're thinking, I'm not ready to be a mentor yet, actually challenge yourself on that. You know, it's a bit of a scary step to feel like, oh yeah, I know enough, I'd be a great mentor. But actually the mentors that are most helpful are often the people that are maybe just a step above, and really somebody who you can aspire to be like, you know, next, rather than in, you know, who knows, a million years, I might become Sheryl Sandberg. So highly recommended. Can be life changing.
As you say as well, I think it's a nice idea to get someone who might be just the next step up, because then it seems like a bit more of a realistic goal for that person to actually achieve. What do you think then that are the most effective diversity initiatives that businesses could implement to help encourage a more diverse workplace?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting question. And I think lots of businesses start out with diversity and inclusion kind of thinking about it that way. And you'll kind of do an assessment of all of the various possibilities that are out there of, you know, what can we do to make ourselves more diverse and inclusive? And then you can buy books that have a stack of them this high that give you a million and one different initiatives. But actually the advice I'd give an organisation really is to start off by understanding where they're at, take a step back and really use the data that they've got about their people, you know, about their engagement maybe, if you have that data, you know, run some focus groups, run some interviews and just understand what it's like for diverse people in the organisation. And really understand as an organisation, how does improving diversity and inclusion aligned to the business goals of the business, you know, things that actually really root this in what this business is all about. And from there, build a strategy that's going to take you in the direction towards that. So it's really that strategy and that understanding of where we are, where we want to be, that is where the most effective initiatives come from.
No blanket answer.
You know, it really depends on where the business is and where they're headed to.
What is the best piece of advice that you've ever received that's stayed with you throughout your career?
Yeah, it was one that I probably would have appreciated learning way, way younger, actually. And it was quite a late realisation about myself, actually. So when I had become a head of product, I'd got a coach who was extremely helpful to me in lots and lots of ways. But something that really stuck with me was, at the time, I'd been having some real struggles with my manager and just quite a lot of conflict at work. And he really helped me to frame it completely differently. So to look at the way that I was feeling, not as, you know, something about the situation, but as about something that I can control. You know, the situation happens. That's how it is. But my reaction is down to me. You know, and if I'm feeling angry, say, actually, I can be a bit more introspective to say, well, what is it that I need that I'm not getting that's making me feel angry? And then coming to that realization that, you know, my feelings are linked to what my needs are. And actually, if I can satisfy that, I don't need to control the whole situation. I can just identify what do I need to change so that I'm having this particular need met. So it just completely turned the picture around for me, actually. You know, rather than having to be on top of absolutely every minute detail of what's going on in the world, I can identify, okay, well, in this situation, you know, I'm feeling this way because of this particular thing that I'm not getting. So now, okay, I can go out there and I can try and get that thing, and then I can move on. And actually, that's been kind of foundational to trying to keep myself sane ever since. working with other people as well to, you know, help see, you know, what are they needing that's not happening for them in that situation, and then really helping, you know, helping them to get control of, you know, what they need to happen as well.
Yeah, I guess as well, like, it's, as you say, with the mentoring thing, you know, you've been given a great piece of advice that has literally stuck with you since that now you can pass that on to other people, and maybe they don't even know about that. So now it's going to stick with them and it will keep going. And then hopefully this is how we can continue to make the change, particularly for women who are currently in tech or want to get into it. I suppose my final question then, given that we are still currently working from home, is, do you have any tips, top tips for working from home and, you know, how to get the best out of yourself whilst we're in this situation?
Yeah, I do. It actually kind of traces all back to a realization I had when I started maternity leave with my son, and like suddenly life was turned completely upside down. You know, I'd been in a job where I was traveling loads, I was seeing loads of people, I had a calendar that was packed full of exciting stuff going on. And then I had a newborn baby and I was stuck at home and you just do baby stuff all the time. And honestly, I found that extremely difficult to cope with. But what I discovered and, you know, what I then put into practice when we entered lockdown is, you know, just routine and time every day to really take care of yourself is really important. It makes a massive difference to your well-being. So having some structure and some time that you put aside that really does just ground you just transforms it, you know. So make sure that you're meeting all of the basic things that you need to do, like, you know, keeping healthy, eating well enough, getting exercise, finding space to get your head clear and just to get on top of all of the stuff that's going on at the moment. So for me, I've built in a couple of times a day. I'll take the dog for a walk before I get started every morning. You know, it's kind of my morning commute now. We'll go around the long block with the dog.
It's a nicer commute, though.
Yeah, it's a very nice commute. It's a bit of a naughty commute sometimes, which ends up in cases animals. It's on a more lighthearted note, you know, with some fresh air, some exercise, some time to clear my head, just get on top of what I want to happen in the day. And then you know, later on in the day, usually the dog's busy patting me on the shoulder. She actually does literally do that. Come up to me.
Come on, let's go.
Let's do another one. So usually fit in another one as well around about lunchtime. And actually just that, you know, punctuation through the day, you know, helps break it up, helps me to do something that's, you know, good for me as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I've found that's really helpful.
Yeah, I think routine is a key. Well, thank you so much for taking time to do all the answer all of our questions. Really appreciate it, and I think they're really insightful.
Oh, thanks, Daisy. Lovely talking to you.